Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Corey Salty Chew Floyd with Marry Me Media. I'm here with Demon Engine, and I'm here with special guest artist Trey Broswell.
How's it going?
We're going to be talking to him today about his work, what inspired him, and plus more. It's the Marry Me Junkies podcast. And we're back. We're here today with Trey Broswell. I've seen him so many times on Instagram, but I was just like, yo, I gotta bring this guy on. I like his art. So I reached out, he reached back, and we made this happen. How are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing good. Can't complain. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, the latest piece I've seen that's been rotating, you took Boondocks the characters from the Boondocks,
yeah,
and put them in Naruto gear, and I'm just like, well, we didn't get the Boondocks reboot that we deserved, but
yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
So, are big fan of the Boondocks, I assume.
Yes, sir, through and through.
All right, but. First, let's get to your background. When did you start making art? Would it start as a child, as a little kid, or did it just?
Yeah, so from what my parents tell me, I started drawing around like 4 or 5 years old, and it was a natural gift or talent that I inherited from my granddad. So at that age, I was drawing like Scooby-Doo, Barney, and at the time DBZ, Dragon Ball Z, was a popular show, and at the time I didn't know it was an anime until like I grew up later on, and so that show kind of like gatewayed my way into like watching Yu-Gi-Oh, Naruto, all the, you know, fan favorite anime shows that we have today. And so me being artistic from an early age really was like therapy for me as a child, because I was like kind of bullied a lot, and I learned how to control my emotions through my imagination. So like my creativity came out through my emotions, then through my artwork. And so it was therapy for me. It was like a way to escape from the real world, to escape my problems from classes or just grades. And it just grew into this bigger picture. And then once I found I could make money from doing art and what I love, it just continues to grow, man. And it just, once I got to that point, I never looked back.
All right, all right. So, did you attend art school?
I did. So I did undergrad at Mississippi State University for fine arts, and then I did grad school in New York at Syracuse for illustration for about 3 years. So I just left Syracuse last year, actually graduated from there. So I got my
master's degree. Congratulations.
Appreciate it. So I'm a professional illustrator now. I have my degrees and what I'd love to do. And so, yeah, man, price that went up.
I know that's right.
Yeah.
So what cartoons help shape the way you view things?
Far as like personal life, or just like as like through my artwork?
Hey, how about a little bit of both?
Okay, so growing up, I was real big on like the OG Cartoon Network shows, so like Teen Titans, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, Naruto, Toonami, all them great shows. I just like grew up trying to copy the artist's work, trying to be like them, but I had a hard time drawing faces for the longest. I couldn't get a face down to where I liked it for years on top of years. So me being like a perfectionist, if I couldn't get the face right, then the whole drawing to me was trash. So I actually stopped doing art about a good year or two, because I just got so frustrated with me not being able to draw a good face. And so after that year or two happened, my grandmother actually pushed me back into the art world. And so I had to like just stay determined, stay focused. I'm just so like hard on myself because the people I was inspired by, I thought I would never get to their level because I was, I think, rushing my growth too fast. And so for personal shows that helped me out, my grandmother that got me back to the art world, she gave me an early comic when I was like 6 or 7 years old of Spider-Man. And reading that comic, him being my favorite Marvel character, I related so much to him because I was kind of a nerd growing up. I was a very skinny guy. I was the guy with glasses, braces, afro. So I was like modern day Urkel in a sense. So Peter Parker being the exact almost opposite, you know, he got bullied by like, you know, Flash Thompson and other guys on the football team. And me, I played ball for a few years growing up and it was very relatable to me. So I think him seeing a hero that I could fit in with just kind of like made me realize, okay, maybe that we all have our struggles, we all have our like differences, but we still have some similarity because we're all human beings at the end of the day. And so for me growing up, I wanted to always have like my own universe of like black characters, black superheroes, and black comics. And so if anyone sees my page, then they'll see a full-on like scrolls of like black art of different characters, different universes that I've created just from like either fan work or like I've done work for like the Egyptian gods, the African Orisha and the Yoruba culture, and just trying to, I guess, put light on African and black culture that we haven't had in the past decades, you know. So,
okay, you were talking about the cartoons that molded you.
Yeah, so I think I ended with
you were talking about Spider-Man.
Yep.
And your grandmother gave you that comic book.
Yeah, and so with that comic book she gave me at an early age, it helped me get through like hard times in my life because I was just so different from everyone else because I was a military brat growing up. And then my dad being in the Army, we moved every 3 years. And so with that happening, it made me very antisocial because as a kid, you move in every 3 years, you don't keep making friends and having to leave. And so it made me distant and it really made me like just standoffish from like everyone else. And so me being that type of person growing up, art was really good for me because I stayed in my room in the house because I didn't really have many friends growing up. Because I was in, from first to 12th grade, I was in like 6 or 7 different schools. So, yeah. So I didn't want to keep building bonds and then having to leave and then like miss those people down the road. So I had, I guess, closure with the things that I did in my artwork and the comics and the cartoons I watched and read. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, which piece of yours is your favorite?
Okay. That's a hard question, man, because each piece has a different meaning to me. But I will say it's a piece I did for my graduate thesis when I was in grad school. I did a piece of the Orisha Yamoja or Yamaya. Mm-hmm. And she's like the Orisha of the water, of the sea. And that piece meant a lot to me because it's very similar to what I saw myself as a kid growing up admiring. Because I spent like, I want to say close to like 40 plus hours on that one specific piece. And it's a bunch of details, a bunch of like sleepless night trying to make it perfect and like capture the my interpretation of the Orisha of the sea and the sea coming to life in the process I did. It made the younger version of myself proud because I saw the growth, because as a kid I thought I would never get to where I am now with my artwork. So that was like a stepping stone for me and like a curve to get over that hump where I just so stuck in my growth. And she's probably my favorite one, but I think all of my Orishas I did are like in that same boat of my favorites, because they were just like really personal to me and like promoting African culture and the Yoruba culture. So it's just all were my favorites. So I'll say all the Orishas I did.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, fan work wise, my favorite is definitely the Boondocks and the.
Well, I mean, you really do go in.
At
first I thought there were just going to be like individual pieces, but no, you have the whole group lineup.
Man, and, look.
And Demon, I just sent it to you. So you can see it.
This is how it happened, man. So like I was hyped for the Boondocks to come back, right? And then we had, you know, the passing away of John Witherspoon, and then Miss Regina King had her son passing. So like we're not gonna get that show back, unfortunately. So I started this series as like as a one time piece. I did like a fan art of like Team 8 and Naruto. Right. That would be just a single piece alone. But then it got so much traction on Instagram, I was like shook. It had got like almost 15,000 likes in like I think a couple of months, and I was just like, whoa, people really like enjoying this series. So like let me push it a little further, like do so continuing. And so I made like all the different teams in the show from what I thought would fit each character, and then after doing that, I was like, okay, how can I add to it? And then the Akatsuki came up. And
I just
kept on like continuing. And it turned to a 2-year long project, man. And that whole lineup you see, I just recently posted, that was like close to 200 hours of drawing every single character and then trying to figure out who fit with which character. Cause like,
I believe it 8,000%. What cracked me up, though, I think was the little girl that R. Kelly pees on. Because you clearly see the pees on the outfit, and I'm like, my God.
Why'd you have to? I feel bad for Tenten.
Look, yeah, okay.
Tenten.
I got some backlash for that, surprisingly, because I was like, I'm making a joke of Tenten, because like she don't get a lot of like screen time.
She really and so, don't.
And so, like, her and the R. Kelly girl are both similar in that aspect. So, like, I did that. So, like, and then with Tenten, R. Kelly girl, I hit her face like the same way they did on the show. And I was like, how can I make people recognize this girl?
You got to add the P.
And I was like, the P thing is, like, instantly clicking in people's head.
The P thing, like, you know, and then the shit with the eyes.
Yeah, man. And so, I think out of the whole lineup, people liked her the most, and Ruckus as a second Hokage. They like
yes, the most. Yes.
So I enjoyed it, man. I tend to like do like what I have in mind for the future is having like making different artwork of them like fighting in different scenes. So like having like different like illustrations of like different fights from the show, from the anime, and like just having them like fighting off from like different scenes.
The only thing you was missing was Stink Meaner and the Hateocracy.
No, I didn't. Stink Meaner's in there. He's Madara.
I mean, the rest of the Hateocracy.
Look,
you know, Stink Meaner is already Madara. Madara is a squad by himself.
He is, and I had them in mind. I forgot the woman's name from that group. I had her playing
Esmeralda Gripe Nasty.
I had her playing like Kaguya, and I had the other two guys playing like Danzo, and then some other guy. But I changed him to Eat Dirt from the show.
Yo.
So, like, I think if I had included like Shippuden in that lineup, I would have put them in there, but it was only part one from the anime show. Cause I didn't have Gaara in there. I didn't have people from like the Sand Village in there, because I was like, you know, later on, but I ran out of like kids from the show to like continue like going outside the Leaf Village, you know, because I couldn't add people I didn't have room for. So like I wanted that Gaara and like his brother and sister, but there aren't enough Boondocks kids to go outside the Leaf Village. So I just ran out of people. So this is either planned very well, but I had a kick out of it, man. It was a lot of time consuming like effort, but people enjoyed it, man. They loved it. And I think that's why I like to do art so much, man, because like seeing all the different reactions, good and bad, and like seeing people enjoy what you do creating is a different feeling, man. Cause I think what set in stone for me, I had did a painting for a woman like years back of her as a younger girl. And she was like on deathbed, like on her last couple of months, I think. And I gave it to her and she just like busted into tears, man. And she was just like, just very emotional. And that for me was like overwhelming because I didn't think that I could like create something that could make someone that emotional and just like break down in tears. So like that's why like I love what I do, man, because like the money is not a first for me. It's an afterthought. I just do it because like I've been drawing before I even made money. I've been drawing 10 years prior to like making my first, you know, purchase or sale on a piece of work. So it's just, it was a love, a hobby before I got into a career. So yeah, man, it's an enjoyable thing I do for sure.
Okay. We're gonna roll.
Huh? I want a side note and just say, because it reminded me of TikTok I was watching earlier, that you sent the fact that you have Ruckus is Hashirama and Stink Meter is Madara. I can definitely now see him, instead of him calling them Uchihas, he's going to call them Uchiggers. I can see them.
Down. Uchihas over there.
God damn, Uchiggers is fucking up the Leaf Village again.
I should have heard.
That's guilty. But yeah, man, he's my favorite, man. He's the comedic factor in that show, man. Like if Ruckus was not in the Boondocks, it wouldn't be as funny, you know. He's a trip, like all around.
You have to have Uncle Ruckus there, for one very solid reason, which I'm gonna tell you as soon as we get back from these quick commercial break.
Okay.
Sounds good. Not that one, because it doesn't it doesn't cover shit.
All right, and we're back with Trey talking about his art, and we're talking about the Boondocks. Now, Uncle Ruckus is a very integral part. Because if you notice with each character, they're a representation of a certain aspect of the African-American diaspora.
Yep.
And sadly, Ruckus represents a lot of people with that mentality.
Yeah, unfortunately, man. And I think Magruder, when he created the show, he was very smart in how he like wrote each character. Because like it was a way for him to like express his thoughts through his version of Huey, because Huey was his brain in the show. What he thought about, you know, society, politics, BET, a whole bunch of different black categories that we like people, I guess, glorify in our community. And it's hard to come by now in our society, now because we're such a soft society, you can't really say much or you'll get canceled. So it's like back then where it's like less social media influence. He was ahead of his time. He knew, like, he predicted a lot of stuff in that show. Like, it was crazy. It was like the black version of The Simpsons in a way.
The funny thing is, and I've been contemplating on this for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I think that the Boondocks would survive in this climate. I just don't think any studio would want to take the financial risk. Because at the end of the day, animation gets costly.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And and I don't think any channel would actually want to just take the risk, especially with the subject matter.
Yeah.
Because I look at the Boondocks the way I look at Dave Chappelle. He's been talking about a lot of the same stuff, but now the punches are hitting a lot harder, and they're showing the reflection of the world, and the world doesn't like the way it looks.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like 50-50 that we didn't get the reboot, because I feel like in our society, if a studio did, like, I guess, take it on, they would have, like, nerfed the show in the worst way. It wouldn't be the same Boondocks we know and love. It would probably be, like, a watered-down version of the show, in my opinion. I think it would, because...
Well, that's what we had with season 4, where Aaron Magruder wasn't writing, and that was horrible.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. So it would be worse now, even with him gone, is the different platform and writers. It would be a lot different, because it might have been more like agenda based and more like, you know, sugarcoating, like being around the bush. I don't know. It's just,
I don't know. Because Aaron Magruder had every intention of like working on this full force. So
did he really?
Yeah. Here was the thing. They hit a wall with John Witherspoon passing away and just a few other pre-production hits, but most of the season was written.
By him?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought he wasn't only on the crew.
No, he was coming back. He got the rights to the Boondocks back.
Okay, because I thought he wasn't coming back. So I thought, yeah, okay. If he was coming back, then excuse what I just said, just cut. But I did not know he was going to come back. Okay, that makes more sense then.
But let's move ahead a bit. Now, are you a fan of any classical known pieces of art? Do you have a favorite artist?
I have a few. I have an old school artist. I like Leonardo. He is very known for his, I guess, anatomy drawings and work. So when I was in undergrad, I took like a life drawing class. We studied the human body and how it moves, turns, and like the muscle placement on like the arm, the calves. And he was really like he was probably the best at doing that. And so for me, looking at him and my mentor that helped me out, Donato Giancola. I like Jim Lee as a comic artist. McFarlane, Todd McFarlane, guy that created Spawn. So I have a lot of different guys I look up to and like take inspiration from. Mm-hmm. So I think I consider myself a little bit of like, I take my favorite parts of each one and put into my work. So okay. I wouldn't be an exact copy of one. I want to be like a little bit of this guy and that guy and more of myself and then my version of what they put out there for the past centuries. And it's hard to compete with guys like that, man, because they've been in the game for so long, and me being like fresh into this industry, it's hard to compete.
It's not a competition.
Job wise it is, because like when you're applying for jobs for like different studios and stuff, they're looking for a name first, and then because if your name is not out there, they won't even look at your portfolio or your work. So like me being like fresh out of school, I don't have the experience of in a professional studio just yet. So I'm doing a bunch of like freelance work now. So with that going for me, it's a lot harder to get my name in like a professional big studio because I don't have the name yet. So that's why I'm putting so much effort into like social media to get my name out there more with different series, different, you know, crossover with the Boondocks, get my name out there, because I can't help if these guys want 3 to 5 years of experience and I'm a year out of school. I'm just like, I can't do a both, you know. So it is what it is, but I've learned to like, I guess, counter it in a way. So, and I've seen like different artists get known from either their YouTube channels or their social media. So it's possible. It's just a lot harder, you know? So it's a grind for sure, man. It's a grind.
Okay, so what's your end game? What's your big goal?
My big goal in a perfect world, man, is to one day, I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I'm working toward it, have my own animation studio where I'm creating my own shows that I want to tell, that I created as a kid, high school, college. So, like, my version, well, I wouldn't say my version. I'll say a universe of not just Black Heroes only, but just my, I guess, my stories of what I've came up with. Because I've got two good ideas of African, you know, either mythology or African culture that I want to tell. Because Hollywood's not going to do it. You know, they want to tell their stories because they love to whitewash the Black culture. But the movies, their shows, and I can't stand it, man. It rubs me the wrong way.
Oh, rubs us too.
Yeah. It's supposed to, because it's just, you make a movie of Egyptian gods, but you have one Black person in the movie. It's cringe. It's so cringe. But
agreed.
I want to tell those stories with the right characters portraying them. Not saying that, you know, we can't do that in Hollywood now, but they probably won't do it until they get more of us in the higher up positions to make it happen. Because as long as we are not in position to make those creative decisions, it's not going to happen no time soon. You know, I hate to say it, but for us to have a Black character that's well known and popular, we have to race a lot white characters that have been around for decades. And I'm a firm believer that if an artist back then created a character to what he wanted to represent and be, I disagree with people decades later changing that race or gender to fit the agenda of society, because it's, to me, and people disagree with me a lot when I say that, I think it's a hand-me-down from the white man. I think it's a hand-me-down character. I think it's crumbs left over from white or whatever character were well established before we even got the swap from Black or whatever. And I think it's disrespectful to us, because it's just like we can't get an original Black character on the big screen without having it from a previous white character. So for me, I want to create original Black characters who don't have that history of being one race and just having good stories, good, you know, shows, good storytelling from a, you know, a Black creative mind without the pressure of pleasing a group of people to, you know, for a cash grab, in my opinion. So that's one of the main reasons I want to have my own animation studio, to like prevent that from being a continued cycle, because we deserve our own universe as well.
Okay.
I can respect that.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. I definitely could see both sides of the coin on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay. So what is your favorite looking anime? Like, I'm not talking about the story or any of that. Just artistically speaking, what's your favorite? Just optics.
Optics alone. Okay. So in my opinion, my favorite is the tie between Demon Slayer and Attack on Titan, because the details in animation, people don't understand. Animation is a hard job to do. For every second of a show or animation, is 24 drawings. So you have, say, like a 60-second animation is like 700 drawings close to it. And so for them to have that much detail in every you know, frame that they do. And as sad as it is, those Japanese artists do not get paid enough for what they do. They be paid super low budget, and they work almost like 19, 20 hours a day. And so they get done with one project, and they have like three more waiting on them after that last project. And so it blows my mind that they can still do that to that level off little sleep and just stressing out and just, I don't know, man. I respect it because it's come a long way than when I came up. But I love the aesthetic of both shows. I love the contrast, the darkness of Demon Slayer to the detail of the line work, the special effects, VFX. It just, so much goes into a show creation. It's just like, people from the outside looking in don't really grasp the amount of work. Because you have your writers, you have your 3D modelers, you have your VFX artists, you have your animators, you have your background designers, your voice actors. You're playing all this stuff years in advance. And it's so time consuming, but in the end, it's worth it. And I want that for myself, because I just want to see that grind for myself and to see that hard labor I did years prior finally paid off in the end when that last episode of my show just like hits the air. So
okay,
those are my favorite two, aesthetically, visually wise speaking. So
shoot, what about you? Oh, me?
Yeah, what's your favorite shows visually speaking? If you had to choose, if you have a favorite.
Well, Demon Slayer is definitely a very beautiful show.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be wrong to not to mention episode 1000 of One Piece.
Mm-hmm.
And
but that's just one episode. It's not the whole series as a, you know.
Yeah, but show. Yeah, but they put so much, like, they put so much work into that episode.
Yeah, because it's a landmark for them. So it's a great landmark. Like, so they had to go out.
Every frame's a fucking painting.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it would be wrong to disregard it.
Yeah, yeah.
And another one, just for its, especially its visuals, mm-hmm. I'm going to have to go with Studio Trigger and Cyberpunk Edgerunners.
Fam.
Oh, yeah.
Anything Studio Trigger.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, we seen that flex you did with Demon Slayer. Hold my beer. That's...
Yeah, they hard over there, too. They good. They dope.
So
that's where I want to be at, man. That's where I see myself like finally making it. It's like having a show closer on that level as everything we just mentioned now. So that aspect for like black characters, I think will be groundbreaking, because like we don't see that a lot in our society as like, you know, animated shows of like really good shows about black characters, black heroes, black whatever. It's just basic, you know, animation, basic, you know, whatever. But I want that really hardcore, just like in your face detail, super like not realistic, but just more so like just in your face, more like, wow, I've never seen like art like this before. Let me check it out. Now we graduate into the show. Now you're stuck. You're not going nowhere. So it's just, I want that effect on generations after me to see themselves on like a major animation company just killing it, you know, going in.
All right. Give us a moment. We'll be right back with a quick message.
All right.
We'll be right back. After these messages.
Hey, give me one second. I'll be right back.
Okay.
All right, so how old are you again?
I am 27.
New school or old school? Anime.
I'm an OG, man. I'm going to say old school, man, because that it just old school walked so that the new school could run. So I think it's a generation thing, too, as well, depending on how old you are, going like one or the other, depending on when you were born. But I think I love both, but old school has just a different place in my heart because I just grew up on it. I had decades with it. I have experience with it longer than these new school shows now. So I'm going to go OG.
I can respect that.
Yeah. What about you?
I like the new school, but new school.
How are you?
I'm 29.
29, okay.
I like the new school, but I enjoy old school. Like Ghost in the Shell will forever hold a place in my heart. But now, because of Edge Runners, I'm always just gonna look at Ghost in the Shell as like the prequel.
Yeah. Ghost in the Shell, prequel to Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
And I think I like OG shows a lot more is because back then you knew they used little CGI in their shows. A lot of stuff was all handmade, drawn. So a lot of these studios now, they have a strict deadline on their projects. They have more CGI. You can tell it doesn't really fit in some of the scenes or frames. So, like, back then, everything was hand-drawn. The backgrounds, the characters, like, it just, you knew it all looked similar. But now, it's moments in some show where it's, like, two CGI and it's, like, you try to combine both and it's just, like, wonky at times, but I don't know. It's just a preference for me. I love like the old school.
There's one show that I think actually executes it really well, and I'm Attack on Titan.
Yeah, and I think because their CGI is not like a 3D model. It's more like a CGI cartoon looking model of the characters in the backgrounds in the show, because all the different crazy camera angles, I think that's like a really like great aesthetic for them. But like the just them flying through the air is just crazy, but they put
as a matter of fact, the YouTube channel Corridor Crew covered how they pull off those effects. So shout out to Corridor Crew on YouTube.
I love them.
Check them out.
Them.
Because they definitely covered that.
I love Corridor Crew. I love their series of like turning like these shows to like or movies to like rated R. Like
that's Avengers. Hilarious.
I'd be dying, man. Like I did the Chocolate Factory on one video. I was like crying, but I love Corridor Crew. They're so dope.
So. What's the worst cartoon you've ever seen? Something that is just visually bad for your eyes.
I have a bunch of those, man. I'm going to say, off the top of my head, Teen Titans Go.
Ooh.
Because me growing up on the OG Teen Titans show, I feel like it just, I wouldn't say disrespect the show. It just, I know they're trying to do, they're trying to like,
Nah, the
new
it's
generation.
Disrespectful. They turned Beast Boy into a fuck boy.
They did, but like,
and Cyborg into more of a dumbass than he already was.
And he's a robot who's super just, smart.
And Robin's just straight cringe.
I just I don't know, man.
Especially
I just,
when it comes to Starfire,
I find it very super cringe. And it's leave the old shows alone, you know? If you want to do an adaptation, make it completely different. Make it, like, on a different Teen Titans squad or something. Don't put the OGs in a childish show like that. Like, you're trying to appease the new generation.
That's a funny thing. I don't think it's that much of a childish show. The aesthetic of it looks very childish.
Man, the whole
but
show.
But there's a... No, there's a lot of fucked up adult humor in Teen Titans Go.
I wouldn't know because I don't watch it. I don't watch
like,
it.
Like, literally, but... Cyborg makes a whole joke about beating meat.
Really?
Yeah. And it's and it's just blatant out there. Like, a kid might be like, ha ha, he's being stupid. Adult be like, wait, is this nigga just beating
me? But again, to your point,
like that in a lot of cartoons.
Exactly. That's not a new thing. That's been going on since we were growing up as a kid. So, like,
and plus, like, Teen Titans goes to the movies is DC's smartest movie.
Really?
It really is. A DC movie that attacks DC movies. Well, and then it it attacks comic book movies in general, but definitely attacks DC movies. The fact that the first trailer of it was them calling Deathstroke Deadpool, I was like, gotta see this.
Man, and don't get me started on the live action show. I seen that first trailer. I refuse to watch it because I just cannot put myself through that.
First season is absolute hot garbage. Second season's actually amazing. And the third season went over a lot better than I thought it would. But that first season, absolutely horrible.
See, that's my thing. If the first season is bad, I'm not going to keep watching it. And to me, to get into a show, if I can't get into the characters that portraying the comic book characters, I'm not sold. So, like,
out of all But that's the funniest thing. You could watch it from season two and be perfectly fine.
Really?
Yeah, because even they have to admit that the first season was so fucked up. So season two, you're just like, oh, all right, I guess we're gonna try and tie up what happened at the end of that season in one episode, and then we're just gonna move on and not talk about this ever again. Cool. Doom Patrol was a hit right out the park.
Mm-hmm. I heard that was a good show. I haven't watched that one.
Strongly advise it, because it's like, yeah, this is a very weird group. This group. Yes, mm-hmm. This is as you're watching it, they're like, yeah, go ahead, look this up while you're watching the show. These are the characters. This is what they can do.
Okay. I might check it out now since you said that, because I didn't watch that show either. But I've heard good things about it, though.
Yeah.
As far as DC go, they've been down for a long time, man. So I feel like...
they're still down.
They still are. And I think their animated stuff is a lot better than movies by a long shot. So
shit, that's putting it mildly.
And... they're putting too much weight on Batman's shoulders. Like, how many times can Batman carry the movie franchise for DC? Like, this is the eighth or the sixth Batman reboot of a different person. And just like, where's all the other DC characters' movies at? Where's, like, you know?
Well, there was supposed to be a Batgirl, and
yeah, you know how bad your movie has to be for the company to lose that much money and then still decide to cancel it? That's crazy.
Well, no, that wasn't a tell about the movie being bad. The new CEO said he just didn't want to put it out, so he just wanted to use it as a tax write-off.
But I thought he said because it was still like a bad, like, written and visually movie. I thought that's part of it, I thought, too.
Nah. They can't afford that. Warner Brothers has lost so much money over the last year that they can't afford to put out so many movies. Like, right now, they had to push back the release of Shazam Shazam, because they could only afford to put out Black Adam right now.
Really?
Yeah. So a lot is riding on Black Adam, which, just by the way that Rock has been talking, he doesn't know the fucking assignment. He doesn't want to be a villain. I'm like, dude, you're kind of a villain, so you might want to
And he's probably going to be an anti-hero so bad, and it's like, man, look, you're not even portraying an Egyptian character with an Egyptian accent. You have a modern American accent. Mm-hmm. And to me, he sounds like the Rock cosplaying Black Adam. He don't sound like Black Adam. He sound like his cell playing or cosplaying a character. Like, bro, he has an Egyptian accent. Now, if the guy he played had a Samoan accent, you best believe he's gonna put that Samoan accent to that character. Because there's no way.
He could still pull the accent out. He just doesn't.
He's not. That's what I'm saying. He's not doing it. From the trailers, from the what he said in interviews, he's talking as himself, just in a costume, and it's just like it's not to me. It's not believable because if I'm going to see a movie who traditionally the guy had an accent, and I hear The Rock's voice from him at WWE, it's just like I don't know, man. It just I'm not sold on it. I'm not invested into the character. I'm more hyped about Dr. Fate than like Adam to me. I'm more hyped about Dr. Fate. He looks super dope, super cool. The mask looks like great, but
get hyped. It's not like he's gonna get a movie.
I'm not saying I want to see him see how they treat him, you know. But far as Black Adam, I'm not really invested in him as a character, you know, because like try to make him as like their Iron Man for the DCEU, which I don't see
how they ain't trying to do that. Good luck with that.
They are because like they're trying to put The Rock as the face of the DCEU.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
I think so too because he's not a villain. He's not. I don't know.
The Rock got booed at San Diego Comic-Con because he could not confirm who was Superman. No, this is facts. If you can find the video, it's out there. Because they did a Q&A for Black Adam, and it was like, who can beat between you and Superman? He's like, well, I guess it all depends on who they hire as Superman. A wave of boos.
I didn't know that. I gotta look that up. I gotta look that up, man. That's insane.
Because Henry Cavill, he's one of us, so...
He's the best Superman I've gotten so far, too. Man, I love Henry Cavill.
Look, it's rough out there when you're The Rock because they expect you everything you do to work, and it doesn't.
Man, look, I just feel like DC's animated stuff is probably going to be the lifesaver for them because their moves are not.
Right now, I'm caught up trying to figure out if I should be happy that they brought Keanu Reeves back as Constantine. Because I like Constantine is a good movie. It actually is a good movie. But Matt Ryan's version of Constantine that was on TV and DC Legends of Tomorrow and in the animated universe, I'm like, yo, he's a great Constantine.
Yeah. And they still having trouble with this Ezra Miller being the Flash because he began to like all these different, you know.
That's because Ezra Miller is fucking Professor Zoom. He's a villain.
He's a villain at heart. But Suicide Squad last year wasn't bad. It was a good film, but it wasn't like it didn't blow me away.
I need him to go to jail, serve that time. Later on, we come back, he gets a movie, and he's starring as the Reverse Flash.
I put it to you like this. I would put out $100 million Batgirl movie right now before I put out the $200 million Flash movie.
For real?
Because here's why. Right now, his name is absolute dog shit.
I mean, I wouldn't use him as the Flash. I'd probably hire somebody else and replace him like they did. But
with the amount of time he's in that movie, you're spending another $140 million just to reshoot everything.
That's true.
They're already in the hole $200 million. At least in Batgirl, hey, Michael Keaton's Batman in that one as well.
That's true. Yeah, you got a point. I agree. Because, like, he's just problematic, man. He just doesn't get it. Like, I don't know.
No, he's not problematic. He's a criminal.
I mean, that's...
He's a criminal. Like, yeah. But...
Yeah. I don't know, man. They're down bad everywhere in DC. They're down bad everywhere, man. It's sad, but... And so is Marvel. Like, their Phase 4, to me, has been garbage, too, because Their shows have been getting low views.
I'm going to just
get out. I'm going to need you to exit stage left, my guy. I'm okay with the DC slander, but now you got
to
watch your...
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree with you there. I mean, sure, there might be a few bumps and bruises on the road, but these shows have actually been really solid. I just don't think the audience knows what they're looking at.
The audience knows because they're the lone fans of the universe.
No. I'm going to tell you right now.
I'm gonna have to disagree because so far a lot of guys, specifically guys, never read She-Hulk.
I'm not talking about just She-Hulk. I'm talking about Moon Knight was a flop to me because they nerfed his character completely bad, and that Ms. Marvel didn't do great numbers, and neither did She-Hulk.
Ms. Marvel, I think Ms. Marvel. I mean, for what she is, that's pretty on target.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's not meant for me.
It's one of those things where people, I think everyone's expectations have gotten so high for every Marvel project that they can't even tell a simple story anymore.
Because that Thor movie wasn't as great as Ragnarok either, but I think the problem with
my problem with
Marvel is that they're more focused now on quantity over quality work because they're pushing out too much stuff at one time. The writers don't have time to make really good scripts for the show or the movies. So, like, in Thor, the Gore villain is like, I don't know. I like Christian Bale as an actor, but for Gore, he didn't feel like Gore. So he felt like a different character. And then it seemed really goofy and comedic. And I get you trying to add more comedy to, like, a dark universe.
Well, no. The biggest problem with that movie is Taika Waititi tried to do the same thing twice.
What you mean?
He tried to do everything he did in Thor Ragnarok twice. A lot of the story. Hell, let's look at the fact that there's a scene that plays out exactly the same way in both movies, only in one of them there's actually a little bit of depth to it. There's in Asgard and Thor Love and Thunder, they're watching stage actors put on a play, right?
Yeah.
They're putting on a play that's being watched by Odin, who's secretly Loki. And the play itself is literally a portrayal of what happened in Thor's second movie, but from Loki's point of view. In Love and Thunder, they try to do the same thing, but it's a really cheap stage play as a tourist attraction for because now New Asgard is a tourist site. They're trying to do the same thing twice, but there's no genuine payout for it.
Yeah. And to me, I don't get this guy of Thunder, Thor. Like, he don't seem like a god. He seems like a regular human with powers to me. I don't get this Greek mythology, like, being. It just seems so, like, goofy now. And, like, I get it. You're trying to add a different theme to it, which is cool. But Thor, he seems very different than what we have in the past. I don't know.
They tried to redo Endgame again for Love and Thunder. Like, yeah, Thor thought he was cool. Then he killed Thanos. Then he got depressed. Then in Endgame, he got over his depression when he went back in time and saw his mom. Mm-hmm. But then at the beginning of Love and Thunder, he's like still depressed, but still kind of, but still fat.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden he just gets jacked again, but he's starting to act like the same old Thor who's kind of dumb and not and without knowledge. I'm like, dude, you should be smarter than this by now. Like your character development has hit a wall.
I don't know, man. It's just, I love Marvel, but I'm just not investing in Phase 4. And if they screw up Black Panther and Blade, I might be done because Moon Knight is one of my favorite characters, and they didn't do him just as awesome, in my opinion. We got little of him in that show, but I'm banking on BP2 and Blade. If they don't hit, they might
They're not even filming Blade yet.
I know, because like quit or something, didn't he? Or
no, he's upset. There's something going on.
I thought they left of the film.
Oh no, I was talking about Marasha Ali. But that is a conversation for another day.
Sounds good.
Trey Broswell, it's been absolutely fascinating to have you on. I'll love to have you back somewhere in the future. Yes, please tell these fine folks out there where they can find you.
So you can find me on any of social media platform, Instagram at TreyTrey_art, Facebook at TreyTreysArt, and yeah, I'm on TikTok as well, TreyTrey_art, and I create art weekly, so check me out if you have time. Appreciate it.
All right, and that's where you can check him out. First and foremost, we want to thank everyone for listening in today. Everyone who's out here on the pod, out here listening to the podcast, we appreciate being part of your day. And for you folks out on YouTube, yes, YouTube, I'm talking to you. I hope you enjoyed your time with us today. We hope you're subscribed. We hope you hit that like button, and we definitely hope you hit that bell so you're always coming back to us. We appreciate you guys very much. Shout out to a lot of the people in Florida. We understand that the hurricane is being very juggernaut-like at this moment. Hang in there. Our Puerto Ricans, we look out for you. Our hearts go out to you. We're going to try to set something up, see if we can get some funds your way. Meanwhile, Demon Engine, it's always a pleasure, sir.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Everybody, you know, stay safe out there. Still stay 6 feet apart.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And whatnot, and sit there and, you know, like, comment, and subscribe. And, you know, I'm going to send Rico to shit in your left shoe.
This is Corey Salty True Floyd for Marry Me Media. That's Demon Engine. This is Trey Braswell. We wish you guys well. Take care.
Peace.
Have a good one.